Chapter 17. A meeting is held. Daniil would allow no immediate action. "Tomorrow," he had said with respectful firmness. "That is my suggestion, Partner Elijah. It is late, and you are in need of rest." Bailey had to admit the truth of it, and besides, there was the need of preparation, a considerable quantity of it. He had the solution of the murder, he felt sure of that, but it rested on deduction, as much as had Daniil's theory, and it was worth as little as evidence. Solarians would have to help him. And if he were to face them, one Earthman against half a dozen spacers, he would have to be in full control. That meant rest and preparation. Yet he would not sleep. He was certain he would not sleep. Not all the softness of the special bed set up for him by smoothly functioning robots, nor all the soft perfume and softer music in the special room of Galadia's mansion would help. He was sure of it. Daniil sat unobtrusively in one darkened corner. Bailey said, "Are you still afraid of Galadia?" The robot said, "I do not think it wise to allow you to sleep alone and unprotected." "Well, have your way. Are you clear as to what I want you to do, Daniil?"
"I am, Partner Elijah."
"You have no reservations under the first law, I hope."
"I have some with respect to the conference you wish arranged. Will you be armed and careful of your own safety?"
"I assure you I will." Daniil delivered himself of a sigh that was somehow so human that for a moment Bailey found himself trying to penetrate the darkness that he might study the machine-perfect face of the other. Daniil said, "I have not always found human behavior logical."
"We need three laws of our own," said Bailey, "but I'm glad we don't have them."
He stared at the ceiling. A great deal depended on Daniil, and yet he could tell him very little of the whole truth. Robots were too involved. The planet Aurora had its reasons for sending a robot as representative of their interests, but it was a mistake. Robots had their limitations. Still, if all went right, this could all be over in 12 hours. He could be heading back to Earth in 24, bearing hope. A strange kind of hope, a kind he could scarcely believe himself, yet it was Earth's way out. It must be Earth's way out. Earth, New York, Jesse and Ben, the comfort and familiarity and dearness of home. He dwelled on it, half asleep, and the thought of Earth failed to conjure the comfort he expected. There was an estrangement between himself and the cities. And at some unknown point in time, it all faded, and he slept. Bailey, having slept, and then wakened, showered, and dressed. Physically, he was quite prepared. Yet he was unsure. It was not that his reasoning seemed any less cogent to himself in the pallor of morning. It was rather the necessity of facing Solarians. Could he be sure of their reactions after all? Or would he still be working blind? Galadia was the first to appear. It was simple for her, of course. She was on an intramural circuit since she was in the mansion itself. She was pale and expressionless, in a white gown that draped her into a cold statue. She stared helplessly at Bailey. Bailey smiled back gently, and she seemed to take comfort from that. One by one, they appeared now. Attlebish, the acting head of security, appeared next after Galadia, lean and haughty, his large chin set in disapproval. Then Liebig, the roboticist, impatient and angry, his weak eyelid fluttering periodically. Quaymott, the sociologist, a little tired, but smiling at Bailey out of deep-set eyes in a condescending way, as though to say, "We have seen one another. We have been intimate." Clarissa Cantoro, when she appeared, seemed uneasy in the presence of the others. She glanced at Galadia for a moment with an audible sniff, then stared at the floor. Dr. Thule, the physician, appeared last. He looked haggard, almost sick. They were all there, all but Gruer, who was slowly recovering, and for whom attendance was physically impossible. Well, thought Bailey, we'll do without him. All were dressed formally. All sat in rooms that were well curtained into enclosure. Daniil had arranged matters well. Bailey hoped fervently that what remained for Daniil to do would work as well. Bailey looked from one spacer to the other. His heart thudded. Each figure viewed him out of a different room, and the clash of lighting, furniture, and wall decoration was dizzying. Bailey said, "I want to discuss the matter of the killing of Dr. Rakane Delmar, under the heading of motive, opportunity, and means, in that order." Attlebish interrupted, "Will this be a long speech?" Bailey said sharply, "It may be. I have been called here to investigate a murder,
and such a job is my specialty and my profession. I know best how to go about it. Take nothing from them now, he thought, or this whole thing won't work. Dominate, dominate. He went on, making his words as sharp and incisive as he could. Motive first. In a way, motive is the most unsatisfactory of the three items. Opportunity and means are objective. They can be investigated factually. Motive is subjective. It may be something that can be observed by others, revenge for a known humiliation, for instance. But it may also be completely unobservable, an irrational, homicidal hate on the part of a well-disciplined person who never lets it show. Now, almost all of you have told me at one time or another that you believed Galatea Del Mar to have committed the crime. Certainly no one has suggested an alternate suspect. Has Galatea a motive? Dr. Liebig suggested one. He said that Galatea quarreled frequently with her husband, and Galatea later admitted this to me. The rage that can arise out of a quarrel can conceivably move a person to murder. Very well. The question remains, though, whether she is the only one with a motive. I wonder. Dr. Liebig himself... The roboticist almost jumped, his hand extended rigidly in the direction of Bailey. Watch what you say, Earthman. I am only theorizing, said Bailey coldly. You, Dr. Liebig, were working with Dr. Delmar on new robot models. You are the best man in Solaria as far as robotics is concerned. You say so, and I believe it. Liebig smiled with open condescension. Bailey went on. But I have heard that Dr. Delmar was about to break off relations with you for matters concerning yourself of which he disapproved. False, false. Perhaps. But what if it were true? Wouldn't you have a motive to get rid of him before he humiliated you publicly by breaking with you? I have a feeling you could not easily bear such humiliation. Bailey went on rapidly to give Liebig no chance to retort. And you, Mrs. Cantoro. Dr. Delmar's death leaves you in charge of fetal engineering, a responsible position. Skies above, we talked about that before, cried Clarissa in anguish. I know we did, but it's a point that must be considered anyway. As for Dr. Quaymott, he played chess with Dr. Delmar regularly. Perhaps he grew annoyed at losing too many games. The sociologist interposed quietly. Losing a chess game is insufficient motive, surely, plainclothesman. It depends on how seriously you take your chess. Motives can seem all the world to the murderer and completely insignificant to everyone else. Well, it doesn't matter. My point is that motive alone is insufficient. Anyone can have a motive, particularly for the murder of a man such as Dr. Delmar. What do you mean by that remark? Demanded Quaymott in indignation. Why, only that Dr. Delmar was a good Solarian. You all described him as such. He rigidly fulfilled all the requirements of Solarian custom. He was an ideal man, almost an abstraction. Who could feel love or even liking for such a man? A man without weaknesses serves only to make everyone else conscious of his own imperfections. A primitive poet named Tennyson once wrote, "He is all fault who has no fault at all." No one would kill a man for being too good, said Clarissa, frowning. You little know, said Bailey, and went on without amplification. Dr. Delmar was aware of a conspiracy on Solaria, or thought he was, a conspiracy that was preparing an assault on the rest of the galaxy for purposes of conquest. He was interested in preventing that. For that reason, those concerned in the conspiracy might find it necessary to do away with him. Anyone here could be a member of the conspiracy, including, to be sure, Mrs. Delmar, but including even the acting head of security, Corwin Attlebish. I, said Attlebish, unmoved. You certainly attempted to end the investigation as soon as Gruer's mishap put you in charge. Bailey took a few slow sips at his drink, straight from its original container, untouched by human hands other than his own or robotic hands either, and gathered his strength. So far, this was a waiting game, and he was thankful the Solarians were sitting still for it. They hadn't the Earthmen's experience of dealing with people at close quarters. They weren't infighters. He said, opportunity next. It is the general opinion that only Mrs. Delmar had opportunity, since only she could approach her husband in actual personal presence. Are we sure of that? Suppose someone other than Mrs. Delmar had made up his or her mind to kill Dr. Delmar. Would not such a desperate resolution make the discomfort of personal presence secondary? If any of you were set on murder, wouldn't you bear personal presence just long enough to do the job? Couldn't you sneak into the Delmar mansion? Adelbish interposed frigidly. You are ignorant of the matter, Earthman. Whether we would or would not doesn't matter. The fact is that Dr. Delmar himself would not allow seeing, I assure you. If anyone came into his personal presence, regardless of how valued and long-standing a friendship there was between them, Dr. Delmar would order him away, and if necessary, call robots to help with the ejection. True, said Bailey, if Dr. Delmar were aware that personal presence was involved. What do you mean by that? Demanded Dr. Thule in surprise, his voice quavering. When you treated Mrs. Delmar at the scene of the murder, replied Bailey, looking full at his questioner, she assumed you were viewing her until you actually touched her. So she told me, and so I believe. I am myself accustomed only to seeing. When I arrived at Solaria and met Security Head Gruer, I assumed I was seeing him. When, at the end of our interview, Gruer disappeared, I was taken completely by surprise. Now, assume the reverse. Suppose that for all a man's adult life, he had been viewing only, never seeing anyone, except on rare occasions, his wife. Now, suppose someone other than his wife walked up to him in personal presence. Would he not automatically assume that it was a matter of viewing, particularly if a robot had been instructed to advise Delmar that viewing contact was being set up? Not for a minute, said Quaymott. The sameness of background would give it away. Maybe. But how many of you are aware of background now? There would be a minute or so at least before Dr. Delmar would grow aware that something was wrong. And in that time, his friend, whoever he was, could walk up to him, raise a club, and bring it down. Impossible, said Quaymott stubbornly. I think not, said Bailey. I think opportunity must be canceled out as absolute proof that Mrs. Delmar is the murderess. She had opportunity, but so might others. Bailey waited again. He felt perspiration on his forehead, but wiping it away would have made him look weak. He must maintain absolute charge of the proceedings. The person at whom he was aiming must be placed in self-convinced inferiority. It was hard for an Earthman to do that to a spacer. Bailey looked from face to face and decided that matters were at least progressing satisfactorily. Even Adelbish looked quite humanly concerned. And so we come, he said, to means, and that is the most puzzling factor of all. The weapon with which the murder was committed was never found. We know that, said Adelbish. If it were not for that point, we would have considered the case against Mrs. Delmar conclusive. We would never have required an investigation. Perhaps, said Bailey. Let's analyze the matter of means, then. There are two possibilities. Either Mrs. Delmar committed the murder, or someone else did. If Mrs. Delmar committed the murder, the weapon would have had to remain at the scene of the crime, unless it were removed later. It has been suggested by my partner, Mr. Olivaugh of Aurora, who is not present at the moment, that Dr. Thule had the opportunity to remove the weapon. I ask Dr. Thule now, in the presence of all of us, if he did this, if he removed a weapon while examining the unconscious Mrs. Delmar. Dr. Thule was shaking. No, no, I swear it. I'll abide any questioning. I swear I removed nothing. Bailey said, is there anyone who wishes to suggest at this point that Dr. Thule is lying? There was silence, during which Liebig looked at an object outside of Bailey's field of vision and muttered something about the time. Bailey said, the second possibility is that someone else committed the crime and carried the weapon off with him. But if that were so, one must ask why. Carrying the weapon away is an advertisement of the fact that Mrs. Delmar was not the murderess. If an outsider were the murderer, he would have to be a complete imbecile not to leave the weapon with the corpse to convict Mrs. Delmar. Either way, then, the weapon must be there. Yet it was not seen. Adelbish said, do you take us for fools or for blind men? I take you for Solarians, said Bailey calmly, and therefore incapable of recognizing the particular weapon that was left at the scene of the crime as a weapon. I don't understand a word, muttered Clarissa in distress. Even Galadia, who had scarcely moved a muscle during the course of the meeting, was staring at Bailey in surprise. Bailey said, dead husband and unconscious wife were not the only individuals on the scene. There was also a disorganized robot. Well, said Liebig angrily, isn't it obvious, then, that in having eliminated the impossible, what remains, however improbable, is the truth? The robot at the scene of the crime was the murder weapon, a murder weapon none of you could recognize by force of your training. They all talked at once, all but Galadia, who simply stared. Bailey raised his arms. Hold it. Quiet. Let me explain. And once again he told the story of the attempt on Gruer's life and the method by which it could have been accomplished. This time he added the attempt on his own life at the baby farm. Liebig said impatiently, I suppose that was managed by having one robot poison an arrow without knowing it was using poison and having a second robot hand the poison arrow to the boy after telling him that you were an Earthman without its knowing that the arrow was poisoned. Something like that. Both robots would be completely instructed. Very far-fetched, said Liebig. Quaymont was pale and looked as though he might be sick at any moment. No Solarian could possibly use robots to harm a human. Maybe so, said Bailey with a shrug. But the point is that robots can be so manipulated. Ask Dr. Liebig. He is the roboticist. Liebig said, It does not apply to the murder of Dr. Delmar. I told you that yesterday. How can anyone arrange to have a robot smash a man's skull? Shall I explain how? Do so if you can. Bailey said, It was a new model robot that Dr. Delmar was testing. The significance of that wasn't plain to me until last evening, when I had occasion to say to a robot, in asking for his help and rising out of a chair, Give me a hand. The robot looked at his own hand in confusion, as though he thought he was expected to detach it and give it to me. I had to repeat my order less idiomatically. But it reminded me of something Dr. Liebig had told me earlier that day. There was experimentation among robots with replaceable limbs. Suppose this robot that Dr. Delmar had been testing was one such, capable of using any of a number of interchangeable limbs of various shapes for different kinds of specialized tasks. Suppose the murderer knew this and suddenly said to the robot, Give me your arm. The robot would detach its arm and give it to him. The detached arm would make a splendid weapon. With Dr. Delmar dead, it could be snapped back into place. Stunned horror gave way to a babble of objection as Bailey talked. His last sentence had to be shouted, and even so was all but drowned out. Attlebish, face flushed, raised himself from his chair and stepped forward. Even if what you say is so, then Mrs. Delmar is the murderess. She was there. She quarreled with him. She would be watching her husband working with a robot and would know of the replaceable limb situation, which I don't believe, by the way. No matter what you do, Earthman, everything points to her. Galadia began to weep softly. Bailey did not look at her. He said, On the contrary, it is easy to show that whoever committed the murder, Mrs. Delmar did not. Jothan Liebig suddenly folded his arms and allowed an expression of contempt to settle on his face. Bailey caught that and said, You'll help me do so, Dr. Liebig. As a roboticist, you know that maneuvering robots into action such as indirect murder takes enormous skill. I had occasion yesterday to try to put an individual under house arrest. I gave three robots detailed instructions intended to keep this individual safe. It was a simple thing, but I am a clumsy man with robots. There were loopholes in my instructions, and my prisoner escaped. Who was the prisoner? Demanded Attlebish. Beside the point, said Bailey impatiently. What is the point is the fact that amateurs can't handle robots well. And some Solarians may be pretty amateurish, as Solarians go. For instance, what does Galadia Delmar know about robotics? Well, Dr. Liebig? What? The roboticist stared. You tried to teach Mrs. Delmar robotics. What kind of a pupil was she? Did she learn anything? Liebig looked about uneasily. She didn't, and stalled. She was completely hopeless, wasn't she? Or would you prefer not to answer? Liebig said stiffly. She might have pretended ignorance. Are you prepared to say, as a roboticist, that you think Mrs. Delmar is sufficiently skilled to drive robots to indirect murder? How can I answer that? Let me put it another way. Whoever tried to have me killed at the baby farm must have had to locate me by using inter-robot communications. After all, I told no human where I was going, and only the robots who conveyed me from point to point knew of my whereabouts. My partner, Daniil Olivo, managed to trace me later in the day, but only with considerable difficulty. The murderer, on the other hand, must have done it easily, since in addition to locating me, he had to arrange for arrow poisoning and arrow shooting, all before I left the farm and moved on. Would Mrs. Delmar have the skill to do that? Corwin Attlebish leaned forward. Who do you suggest would have the necessary skill, Earthman? Bailey said, Dr. Jothan Liebig is self-admittedly the best robot man on the planet.
Is that an accusation? Cried Liebig.
Yes, shouted Bailey.
The fury in Liebig's eyes faded slowly. It was replaced not by calm exactly, but a kind of clamped-down tension. He said, I studied the Delmar robot after the murder. It had no detachable limbs. At least they were detachable only in the usual sense of requiring special tools and expert handling. So the robot wasn't the weapon used in killing Delmar, and you have no argument. Bailey said, Who else can vouch for the truth of your statement?
My word is not to be questioned.
It is here. I'm accusing you, and your unsupported word concerning the robot is valueless. If someone else will bear you out, that would be different. Incidentally, you disposed of that robot quickly. Why?
There was no reason to keep it. It was completely disorganized. It was useless.
Why? Liebig shook his finger at Bailey and said violently, You asked me that once before, Earthman, and I told you why. It had witnessed a murder which it had been powerless to stop. And you told me that that always brought about complete collapse, that that was a universal rule.
Yet when Gruer was poisoned, the robot that had presented him with the poison drink was harmed only to the extent of a limp and a lisp.
It had actually itself been the agent of what looked like murder at that moment, and not merely a witness, and yet it retained enough sanity to be questioned. This robot, the robot in the Delmar case, must therefore have been still more intimately concerned with murder than the Gruer robot. This Delmar robot must have had its own arm used as the murder weapon.
All nonsense, gasped out Liebig. You know nothing about robotics.
Bailey said, That's as may be. But I will suggest that security head Adelbisch impound the records of your robot factory and maintenance shop. Perhaps we can find out whether you have built robots with detachable limbs. And if so, whether any were sent to Dr. Delmar. And if so, when?
No one will tamper with my records, cried Liebig.
Why? If you have nothing to hide, why?
But why on Solaria should I want to kill Delmar? Tell me that. What's my motive?
I can think of two, said Bailey. You were friendly with Mrs. Delmar. Overly friendly. Solarians are human after a fashion. You never consorted with women, but that didn't keep you immune from, shall we say, animal urges. You saw Mrs. Delmar, I beg your pardon, you viewed her, when she was dressed rather informally and...
No, cried Liebig in agony.
And Galatea whispered energetically, No.
Perhaps you didn't recognize the nature of your feelings yourself, said Bailey.
Or, if you had a dim notion of it, you despised yourself for your weakness and hated Mrs. Delmar for inspiring it.
And yet you might have hated Delmar, too, for having her.
You did ask Mrs. Delmar to be your assistant. You compromised with your libido that far. She refused, and your hatred was the keener for that. By killing Dr. Delmar in such a way as to throw suspicion on Mrs. Delmar, you could be avenged on both at once.
Who would believe that cheap, melodramatic filth? Demanded Liebig in a hoarse whisper. Another Earthman, another animal maybe, no Solarian.
I don't depend on that motive, said Bailey. I think it was there, unconsciously.
But you had a plainer motive, too. Dr. Ricane Delmar was in the way of your plans and had to be removed.
What plans? Demanded Liebig.
Your plans aiming at the conquest of the galaxy, Dr. Liebig, said Bailey.